Commissioner Elizabeth Long presiding.
Please be seated. As you can hear, I'm battling a bit of laryngitis, so if at any point you have trouble understanding me, let me know and I'll repeat myself. The final case this morning is 2014-1036, Board of Education of the Westerville City Schools versus Franklin County Board of Revision. For the appellants, we have Mr. Camillus.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is John Camillus. I'm here on behalf of the appellant landowners Elizabeth Henry and Bruce and Lorraine Chase. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, if I may. I owe you the same apology. I'm fighting off a head cold that I got from my kids, so my voice is a little difficult to listen to. I apologize. And if I need to repeat myself, certainly let me know. There's a saying that was popularized by the Wharton School of Business. In God we trust, all others need data. The appellants in this case own 3 tracts of property in the Westerville School District near the Hoover Reservoir. The Board of Tax Appeals assigned a value to these properties for January 1st, 2011, at a time when property values in Central Ohio had been plummeting in the wake of the 2008 financial crisis, that cumulatively reflects that the properties had tripled in value. And it did so without any appropriate data to support such a profoundly skewed valuation. There's another saying popularized by computer programs that my client, computer programmers such as my client Bruce Chase, garbage in, garbage out. If the input data is flawed, the results will be flawed. In this case, the BTA accepted a flawed appraisal submitted by the Board of Education, which resulted in a flawed valuation of the subject properties. The Sprout appraisal was so flawed, for reasons that I'll discuss, that it was unreasonable for the BTA to rely on. Being cognizant of my time, I'm going to likely focus my argument on 3 particular points. The first relates to what we had titled as Proposition of Law Number 2 in our brief, and that relates to the Board of Education meeting its burden of proof before the BTA. As the court is well aware, the appellant before the Board of Tax Appeals has the burden of proof to demonstrate that the valuation that was applied by the Board of Revisions was improper. There are the main property that the Board of Education's appraiser, Mr. Sprout, relied on as a comparable for its valuation was the Harker Tract, which was a neighboring piece of property here on the Hoover Reservoir. That tract sold in 2007. And not only has the economic crisis occurred since then, but there were 2 important changes to the property since then. One was that FEMA, the federal agency, had reassessed the property and had designated broad swaths of all of the 3 tracts at issue in this case as flood zones. And beyond that, the sewer regulations had changed to the point where it was unclear if sewer would even be possible to be brought to these properties, and if so, at what costs. Those issues function as defects to the property. They are problems that make the property less marketable, less valuable, and that have to be taken into account in order to properly value the property.
Mr. Camillus, yes. So your argument is that by failing to take those things into account, the BTA somehow acted unlawfully, because that evidence was presented to the BTA, correct?
Correct.
And they decided that Mr. Sprout's appraisal was more credible?
They did decide that. And okay. The argument is that the BTA acted unlawfully. And they acted unlawfully by reversing the Board of Revision's decision where the Board of Education had not met its burden of proof. I would direct you primarily to footnote 2 of the Board of Tax Appeals opinion. In footnote 2, the Board of Tax Appeals recognizes this sewer issue. And there was testimony in the BTA hearing about the sewer issue. And the Board of Tax Appeals recognizes the testimony about the sewer issue, but says, based on this record, we cannot determine whether or to what extent this sewer issue impacts the value of the property. Okay? I'm rephrasing that, but that's another way of saying it would be speculation. Okay? Well, if the Board of Tax Appeals is in a position where it can only speculate as to the value of the property, what that means is that the appellant, here the Board of Education, who has the burden of demonstrating what the value of the property is to show that the Board of Revision's valuation is wrong, by definition, they have not met that burden of proof. The Board of Education responds to that by saying, no, we, the landowners, were the proponents of that evidence. We were the ones who brought forth to the BTA the evidence about the change in sewer regulations. And as the proponents of that evidence, we had the burden of demonstrating how the sewer issue in particular impacts the value of the property. But that's not the law. They cite four cases in support of that. But I would urge the court, and I said this in our reply brief, to look very carefully at all four of those cases. None of them stand for that proposition. In many of them, it is the landowner is the appellant. And the landowner is saying there's a defect in the property, and the Board of Revisions failed to take that into account. And so the Board of Revisions valued the property too high. And what the Board of Tax Appeals said, quite properly in those cases, was, well, you're the appellant. You have the burden of proof. You can't just throw out there that there's a defect in the property without giving us the information we need to be able to value that, or how much the property is devalued because of those defects. You're the appellant. You have the burden of proof. You have to show us that the Board of Revision valuation is wrong. So you can't just throw out a defect without the evidence that shows us how the defect impacts the value of the property. But here we're flipped. It's the Board of Education. It is we, the landowners, who brought that defect to the attention of the BTA. But it is the Board of Education, as the appellant, as the party dissatisfied with the Board of Revision decision, who has the burden of showing how that impacts the value of the property. If they can't do that, and the BTA here in footnote 2 admitted that they didn't have in the record before them evidence to know how that impacted it, then it's pure speculation, any valuation that gets put on the property. And when you're under those circumstances, it means the appellant has not met their burden of proof.
So would you say that, going with your theory for a moment, did the burden on the Board of Education arise there to address the effects of the sewer regulation issue because you the property owners brought that up and brought that to the attention of the BTA? Or would you put a burden on the Board of Education to sort of disprove or prove that any legal changes in various areas haven't impacted property value across the board?
Sure.
Kind of proving the absence of
fair
of a
enough.
Change.
As with any trial, hearing, you know, proceeding in which evidence is submitted, really only evidence that gets submitted can be addressed. Okay? If there is a defect in a property that nobody knows about and nobody raises, then the Board of Education in this situation can't be faulted for not addressing it, and the Board of Tax Appeals can't be faulted for not taking it into account. Everything has to be brought to the Board's attention. But any material circumstance that affects the value of a property is something that the party with the burden of proof has to address. If a party, I use this kind of maybe silly example in our reply brief. If you had a property and it's a building and it has asbestos and it has lead paint and the state's just announced they're putting a nuclear power plant right next door, all these things that clearly devalue the property. And the Board of Education goes up to the Board of Tax Appeals as appellant and just ignores all of those things. And the property owner says, wait a second, this property has asbestos, it has lead paint, they just announced that they're building a nuclear generation facility right next door, and their valuation doesn't take into account any of that. It's not the landowner who has to say, and therefore here is how it devalues the property if the landowner prevailed below. It's the Board of Education whose suggested valuation is insufficient, because there are these material characteristics of the property that clearly impact the valuation that they haven't addressed.
Did the owner's appraisal take these material characteristics into account?
It doesn't matter. I don't believe that the owner's appraisal specifically addressed the sewer regulation in terms of how it took a specific, how it impacted the precise dollar value, but it's the Board of Education that had the burden of proof. Once the Board of Revisions rules, that's the valuation that the Board of Education is tasked with demonstrating was an improper ruling, an improper valuation. As a result, the landowners before the Board of Tax Appeals didn't need to show anything about how the sewer regulation impacted the value of the property. That's the burden of the Board of Education.
So how would the BTA have arrived at a value in this case?
What the BTA should have said here, as it relates to this specific issue, is there's a sewer regulation. There's legitimate concerns about whether sewer can even be brought to this property, whether it can actually even be developed. It's going to cost, and there was testimony before the BTA, at least $100,000 just to figure that out. So a purchaser of the land is going to be out $100,000 after the purchase just to see if it can even be developed. What the BTA should have said is, because of that issue, we are left to speculate as to the value of this property. We don't have enough information before us to make a clear determination of what the value of the property is, or to clearly determine that the Board of Revision valuation was wrong. As a result, because we're left to speculate, the Board has not met its burden of proof, and the Board of Revision valuation stands. And let me phrase it in hopefully a succinct way. Before an appellant's proposed valuation of a property can satisfy the appellant's burden of proof before the BTA, their valuation must take into account all the material characteristics of the property. And if it doesn't, it does not satisfy their burden of proof. The second issue I want to address, if I have time, is that the Sprout appraisal that the Board of Education offered and on which the BTA relied had significant, clear, factual errors. The two biggest ones are that he said that these properties are waterfront. They are not. One of the three has like inches that are waterfront. The rest is not waterfront. The Sprout appraisal also said that the properties are serviced by all necessary utilities. It's on pages 11, 12, and 13 of the Sprout report. The properties are not serviced by all necessary utilities. There's no testimony that they were. The testimony made clear that there was electric and phone to the properties right there that could be run to them. There's no water, there's no sewer, there's no gas, there's no cable, and there's legitimate doubt about how easily or at what cost those utilities could be brought to these properties. But Sprout's appraisal explicitly says it's serviced by all necessary utilities, and it's not. These properties are not. And that's a major, clear, factual mistake. And when an appraisal has a factual mistake of that magnitude, it's unreasonable to rely on it. It's similar to the issue I just discussed. Those factors, those issues relating to the lack of utilities and the cost of bringing utilities there impact the value of the property. And if the Board of Education hasn't properly addressed that and indicated how it impacts the value, then they haven't met their burden of proof. I'm running out of time with my rebuttal time in mind. The last point I'll just try to make briefly relates to both what we call Proposition of Law Number 1 and Proposition of Law Number 5. The comparables that Sprout used are frankly pretty ridiculous. This is undeveloped land on the Hoover Reservoir with its woods, its messed up topography, its flood zones, and their appraiser, Sprout, used comparators that were developed properties. I mean, we're talking about, he uses a plot of land that's on the New Albany Golf Course in a developed subdivision where people are living. At some point, we understand these properties are unusual. You have to give an appraiser sort of broader, you know, leeway than you might if you're in a, you know, normal huge suburban subdivision with lots of pretty neat and tight comparables. But at some point, the comparables become so distinct. These are both very remote in time comparables and very, very different types of properties. And Mr. Sprout simply said, you know, yeah, and because of the time it was, or because of these differences, we had to adjust up, we had to adjust down. And he gave no reasoned indication of how he arrived at those upward and downward adjustments. So I'll leave it with a quote from the Board of Education's brief about making these sorts of qualitative adjustments. The Board of Education acknowledges that when an appraiser uses a qualitative adjustment, they must, quote, use descriptive terms that clearly convey the magnitude of the difference between the comparable property and the subject property in terms of each element of comparison. Mr. Sprout's appraisal does not do that. When you look at what he said in his testimony and in his actual appraisal, when going from the comparable properties to his valuation of the subject properties, he does not clearly convey the magnitude of the difference between the comparable and the subject properties in terms of each element of comparison. And in this situation, given the vast differences between the comparable properties and the subject properties, it was incumbent on him to do that. So for those reasons and for the other reasons articulated in our brief, we would ask this court to reverse the decision by the BTA and reinstate the valuation that the Board of Revisions arrived at.
Thank you.
I reserve the remainder of my time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Camillus. For the appellee, Ms. Gorey.
Thank you very much. Thank you. May it please the court. I'm Kelly Gorey with Rich and Gillis Law Group, and I'm representing the appellee, the Westerville City School District. I want to start out with today, with what we believe to be the scope of this court's review of this decision. This court has repeatedly held that when the BTA reviews competing appraisals, it has extremely broad and wide discretion in reviewing both the sufficiency of the appraisals and the credibility of the witnesses that are before it. This court has held that when the BTA accepts one appraisal over another, the court will not step in and reverse that decision of the BTA unless it can find that the BTA has specifically abused their discretion. And in the Health South case, which I cited in my brief, the court has also held that an abuse of discretion actually amounts to a total absence of evidence. This is a super BTA case. Essentially, the appellants are asking the court to step in and de novo evaluate the credibility of their appraisal and their witness, which this court is not at liberty to do. I want to talk about their first point that was made here today, which is the burden of proof. Once an appraisal is presented at the Board of Revision, if the Board of Revision accepts that appraisal, the appellant at the BTA, which in this case is the Board of Education, does bear the burden of persuasion. We have to come forward with some new evidence that disproves the value that the Board of Revision adopted. We did that. We met that burden. We produced an appraisal. Regarding the sewer regulations and having any impact upon the value, it's the proponent of that argument who bears showing what the burden of that impact is. Simply because the Board of Education was the appellant at the BTA, we don't acquire any burden of proof regarding what impact sewer regulations have or don't have upon the property. This issue also wasn't raised, to the best of my knowledge, wasn't raised at all at the Board of Revision, and it's also not raised in their appraisal. Mr. Berger actually concluded that there were no adverse factors to developing the property for the development of a single-family residence, or all three properties, in his highest and best use conclusion, and I cited that in my brief. So, in fact, the sewer issue was first raised at the BTA, and the Board of Education doesn't acquire any burden other than disproving the valuation of the properties that the BOR adopted, which we met. And I think the cases I cited in my brief were cited merely to show that the proponent, the appellants have argued that impacts, diminishes the value of the properties. They bear the burden at any level, regardless of who's the appellant, approving the actual impact of that adverse condition upon the value.
Are you aware of any cases where the proponent is the appellee?
I am not. I could not locate any. And I think, as Mr. Camillus explained quite well, usually the Board of Revision won't grant a reduction in value based upon an adverse condition. And so it just happens to be that the owner arguing for the reduction in value happens to be the appellant. I did look for any other cases where that was not the case, but I did not find any. And then regarding the, he talked a few minutes about the factual errors in the appraisal. If you look at the record, the properties are all on Hoover Reservoir. The state, I believe, owns the actual shoreline, and so the lot lines of the property do not actually touch where the water would come at its high water mark. And I think that's the basis of their argument, that they don't have water frontage. They most certainly would have water views. And I think Mr. Berger also acknowledged in their appraisal that one of the conditions of the property, I want to get the word right, I think he says waterfront. Yes, he actually agrees that they're waterfront properties. But the record is pretty clear that Mr. Sprout, he explained why the water amenity was special to the properties here, that you would obviously have significant views when you develop a single family home. And not one single one of Mr. Berger's comps actually had any waterfront views access. Regardless, his comparables were basically rural agricultural properties. And I think it's pretty clear from the record that both appraisers agree that these properties will likely be developed as custom homes. And Mr. Berger's comparables aren't even semi-comparable to what he determines is the highest and best use for the property. And
what's your response to the owner's argument that the sale of the Harker tract, which Mr. Sprout certainly relied significantly upon, is too old and preceded an economic downturn and things have changed a lot? What's your response?
I think my response is twofold. And both of these were raised either at the BTA hearing or in my brief. When you have properties that are more unique, you will have to go back farther in time because there are generally less comparable sales to choose from. And Mr. Sprout explained that. I think he called this, I want to say he called the sales scarce. So he was looking for vacant residential lots with a waterfront amenity that would be developed as custom or estate homes. And he explained that he had to go back further in time simply because there are less sales to choose from. The second one, I'm pretty sure this is in my brief. The appraisal of real estate also notes that in stagnant or stale market times, an appraiser will have to go back, may have to go back farther, may even have to go to different property types, but Mr. Sprout didn't do that here. But how you account for that is you make market conditions adjustments. And Mr. Sprout actually made a 50% downward adjustment to the Harker sale on a per acre basis, and then also a 25% downward adjustment for market conditions.
Did he explain how he arrived at those figures?
He did. And it is actually in the hearing transcript. He acknowledges when he's talking about his overall value on a per acre basis, I believe he says 25% and 50%. And I believe I did put the citation in my brief. The thing about the Harker tract is it's literally adjacent to the subject properties. It's physically similar in every single aspect. The only adjustment that needs to be made is a market conditions adjustment. And so the BTA agreed that it's not proper for an appraiser appraising the adjacent properties to completely ignore a sale which is in every aspect similar. And the only difference is the time in which it sold. That can be properly adjusted for. And I think why Mr. Berger didn't use it here was because his adjustment would have had to have been too large. It would have affected his credibility because his per acre values, did this last night, I think are 20% of the Harker sale on a per acre basis. So that would have required an 80% adjustment. And then for the other two, I think he concluded a little bit higher per acre, and that would have been a 2/3 adjustment on that sale. And I think he explained at the BTA the only reason he didn't use it was because he believed market conditions had changed. But as you get into using sales where the magnitude of the adjustment has to be that large, it obviously affects the credibility of the appraiser and the use of that comparable. I think the final issue I wanted to talk about, and these were both raised in their brief. Excuse me. The Akron case doesn't apply here at all. Neither this court or the Board of Tax Appeals has ever held that Akron or the recency standard applies to comparables in an appraisal report. And the reason for that is because they can be adjusted. When you're using an actual subject sale for true value for an actual subject property, you don't make any adjustments to that sale. That sale simply constitutes true value. When you're using the sale for an appraisal, you obviously are able to and should make adjustments to that sale. So that's a novel argument, and I don't believe that's supported by any precedent. The second one is they also raised in their brief that Mr. Berger's lack of verification of his sales should be entitled to some presumption of validity. Again, that's a novel argument. Neither this court or the BTA has ever held that any presumption of arm's length nature or validity applies to comparable sales in an appraisal report. And I think, actually, Mr. Berger used a sale that I think this really is a good example of illustrating why you don't do that. One of the sales that he used, it was also a New Albany Country Club. He didn't verify it with any parties involved. All he did was consult the auditor's records, and I believe either the MLS or the Haynes report, which is another comparable sale reporting website. He wrote in his appraisal, and we asked him about this at the BOR, and I think maybe the BTA too. He wrote, a Buttle purchase, deed restricted. And I believe we asked him, well, what is the deed restriction? Is this in fact a developable lot? If it's not a developable lot, it shouldn't be used as a comparable in the report at all. So Mr. Sprout talked about why it's important to verify the comparable sales. And so you can find out things like that. Who were the parties? What were the conditions? Were there any extraordinary financing conditions? Anything like that. I think the record is clear that Mr. Sprout did do that, and he testified at the BTA as to exactly who he talked with regarding all of his sales. And one he could not verify, so he testified at the BTA that he did not place and could not place much reliance upon that sale. And so that was the extent of the BTA's holding on that issue. And we believe that finding is specifically supported by the record. I think that's actually all I have. Yes, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ms. Corey. Mr. Camillus, you have reserved 8 seconds for rebuttal.
8 seconds.
Why don't you go ahead and take a minute?
Thank you. I'll be as quick as I can, Your Honor. I appreciate it. I want to be clear about one thing first. We are not asking this court to evaluate our Berger appraisal versus their Sprout appraisal. It is true that the BTA has broad discretion about that, and that is not our position. Our position is this Sprout appraisal in and of itself is so flawed for the reasons in our brief and the reasons we discussed that they failed to meet their burden of proof with the Sprout appraisal, and we didn't need to submit anything. They had the burden of proof. It's not a matter of is the Berger appraisal better than the Sprout appraisal or vice versa. It's not our position. I appreciated your question about whether she had any cases where the proponent of the evidence before the BTA was the appellee. No, I couldn't find any either. There don't seem to be any out there, and that may be an issue of first impression in this case in some sense. But I will say that the cases at the Board of Education cites are all very clear where they talk about who has the burden of proof. They say that it's the appellant, not the proponent of the evidence, the appellant. There's no cases out there that say the proponent of the evidence has the burden of proof. And the last thing I would mention is, in response to one of your questions, my opposing counsel said that, yes, Mr. Sprout explained in his testimony how he arrived at the adjustment, adjusting down for economic conditions. He did not. And I'd urge the court to look at the testimony and the testimony that's cited in their brief. He just says 2007 was superior economic conditions, so I adjusted down 50% here, 25% here, especially with something like this. I mean, this isn't a curb appeal issue where it's sort of automatically subjective. When you have economic market conditions that can be quantified, to just kind of pull out of thin air 50% here, 25% there is insufficient.
Thank you, Mr. Cabellas. This case will be submitted, and the court will advise the parties of its decision.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All rise.